Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. This is Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. On March 20th, about 10,000 of us gathered to march against the war in Iraq in Washington, D.C. 8 of us were arrested that day, and that led to 6 of us, including myself, being held over for 50 hours in D.C. jails. Today I'm going to talk to 3 of my fellow arrestees about the criminalization of dissent and the seeming targeting of protesters. My first guest on today's soapbox is my friend and cellmate, Elaine Brower. Elaine is on the National Steering Committee of World Can't Wait, member of Military Families Speak Out, and the mother of a Marine who did 3 tours in Iraq. Elaine, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thanks for having me, Cindy.
Well, I'm glad you're on. When we were in jail, that 50 hours we were in jail, freezing, you know, bored, everything that goes with being in jail for 50 hours, we talked about our frustration with the ineffectiveness of marches on Saturdays and the ineffectiveness of the anti-war movement in general. We also talked about the inability of some people to take the step that we took on that day to put our bodies on the line and be arrested. What do you think the movement needs to do to be more effective, you know, in stopping the wars? Because I think that's what we are all doing this for.
Yeah, I understand and I agree with you. If we look at our history, even world history, the only events that change what we want to change, revolutionary change, is done through actually putting your bodies on the line, getting radicalized, standing up against authority, whatever that authority is, and saying, no, we're not going to put up with this anymore. And one of the problems that we're up against with this movement is that they're co-opted by the Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party does not want their base to mobilize. So what we saw with the election of Obama and prior to that was the complete demobilization, if there was any anti-war movement before that. It just continued to disappear. And now I'm not sure who's left out there that really wants to make this change, but whoever it is, that's what they're going to have to do. And it's not an easy step. It's a very difficult step to take. It's difficult for me. It's difficult for you. We have families. We have lives. But we don't want to see this empire terrorize any more people around the globe.
Well, one of my friends last night made an interesting observation. He said that the anti-war movement killed itself by supporting Barack Obama.
Yeah, that's true. But I always think that from the beginning, the anti-war movement was factionalized in a way that they were somewhat supporting the Democrats. Like in 2006, we saw a lot of supposed anti-war groups going out heavily to tell people to vote for the Democrats. So I think it started long before Obama, and then with Bush sort of as our, you know, the person that we really love to hate, he was still in power. So that gave the anti-war groups something to challenge, but they would never challenge those Democrats in office like Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and all the rest of them, who really are also on the side of the U.S. empire. And they have, you know, their hands in the pockets of the capitalist system. They never went against that, and they just allowed them to keep funding the war and getting away with it. And then here comes Obama and further demobilizes the anti-war movement because most of them are Democrats. What we have to do is get away from the mentality that the Democrats are the saviors of us. We are the saviors.
Well, and, you know, I hate to use the infantile terminology, but we're the boss of them. They're not the boss of us. Well, when we were in jail and we finally went to go see a judge, we all pled not guilty, and you have been arrested in Washington, D.C. far more times than I have, but I was the only one that was not given a choice whether I could pay the bond and forfeit my right to a trial, but we all decided we were going to go back on June 9th to, face trial for what we did. And what we did was you and Mathis and 2 other people laid down in front of the White House, and then four other people, including myself, crossed over the police line to join you, and we were arrested, and six of us were kept in jail for 50 hours, and two people got let out that day. But one of the restrictions that we got on our release was a stay-away order from the White House. Do you think that with all your arrests, you were arrested numerous times when Bush was president, you've been arrested since Obama's been president. With all your arrests, have you ever had felt like we were being specifically targeted because we are protesters?
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because I've noticed since Obama took office, protesters like us, anti-war protesters specifically, are targeted. And this is the longest stay I've had, and as well as you and the other people that were arrested with us. It was probably the harshest I've ever been treated. And I've been arrested in Philadelphia, which has some of the worst police and the toughest. But this particular arrest was almost a vindictive arrest. And from the moment they grabbed us, you could tell that this was not going to be easy for us. And, you know, we were really only exercising our First Amendment right. We were on the sidewalk between barricades in front of the White House. We weren't even chained to the White House fence. And 2 days before, Lieutenant Dan Choi and his partner, who were protesting against the Don't Ask, Don't Tell laws in the military, chained themselves to the White House fence, and they did not stay in jail for 50 hours. So I believe that we decided at one point that, yes, you were definitely targeted, and that really is upsetting because this is supposed to be, quote-unquote, the Democrats that are in office that are supposed to be on our side. And yet we were really, our rights were not only trampled on, they gave us a stay-away order, and I thought we were innocent until proven guilty. And we were held in indeterminable amount of hours in horrible conditions, and we only had a citation, which took us to traffic court.
Right. And so the penalty, if we're found guilty, doesn't even include any jail time. And we've already spent 50 hours in jail. So, Elaine, you got out of jail. We got out on Monday. On Tuesday, you had to be at West Point for another trial. You were arrested protesting Obama and his escalation in Afghanistan. And knowing how harsh it's becoming, what would you recommend people to do? We're recommending, you know, people to step up civil disobedience, but it's not a comfortable process. What would your words be to our fellow protesters, especially people younger than we are?
Yeah, it is a very difficult choice to make. I guess that I feel an obligation to the people of the world and to humanity to put myself on the line, my job on the line, and it is difficult. I can only say that, unfortunately for us, those of us that have this moral conscience and really want to see better for the world and for us, we will have to put ourselves on the line. It's going to take active civil resistance to stop the way this government is headed. We know that from history, and all I could say is you just have to understand that you're going to live through it. Remember the Freedom Riders. They not only were killed, they were beaten, and they kept going. You know, hopefully it will never come to that where we're going to be, you know, beaten to a pulp or shot or burned. But, you know, I'm willing to be out there. And I'm hoping that even the young people realize if you want a better future and you want to see this world continue, you're going to have to make that sacrifice.
Well, thank you, Elaine, for being out there on the front lines and constantly putting your comforts and, like you said, your job on the line for peace and for justice. And like our dear friend Howard Zinn said, that civil disobedience isn't dangerous. It's civil obedience that is dangerous, especially when we have a government that's lost its mind. So thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and hang in there, and I'm sure I'll see you soon.
Thanks,
out there
Cindy.
On the front lines.
You take care, okay?
Okay, you
bye.
Too, Elaine. Thank you. Bye-bye. Our next guest on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox is my friend John Gold, and John is a 9/11 truth activist. John, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Hi, Cindy. Thank you for having me on.
No problem. Well, we're not going to talk about 9/11 truth today, but we're talking about our arrest when we were in front of the White House on March 20th. And to be honest, you came to Washington, D.C. to participate in Camp Out Now, and one of your goals was to be arrested because you've never been arrested for peace or justice before, have you?
No, I've never been arrested.
And so you came, you were going to help us commit acts of civil resistance, and your plan was to eventually be arrested, right?
Absolutely.
Well, tell my listeners what happened on March 20th.
On March 20th, after you and I had lunch, we walked back to the White House to where the march had ended in front of the White House, and Mathis and a few other people laid some coffins down in front of the White House, and the police decided that they would set up an arbitrary arrest zone, or at least that's what I call it, which was a police line about 50 feet by 50 feet in front of the White House around Mathis. And so we walked to the police line, and you tried to cross, and they told you to go back in. And then we went around to the barricade in front of Mathis and everyone laying down. And somehow the barrier fell down in front of you. You did not push it. It just fell over. And then you walked across, and then before I knew it, the barrier had come back up, and I couldn't get through. So I said, F it. And I started to push, and the cops were pushing back. And finally, one of them reached to their side to, I guess, get some kind of mace or maybe pull their gun and blast me away. But so I decided then I would walk around to the police line because they were manhandling you.
Right.
And I didn't like that, obviously. And I was screaming, let her go. And so I decided that I would, you know, the police line failed, and I found myself inside the police zone, the arrest zone, and I decided I was going to get arrested to try and keep an eye on you, which is kind of hard to do considering they separate us in jail, but
right.
I thought it was the right thing to do.
Well, unfortunately, for your first arrest, it was not an easy one, but tell my listeners what happened after you arrested. I'm, you know, particularly interested in the handcuffs and,
well,
you know, other things like that.
After they arrested us, they originally put metal cuffs on me, and then before they put me into the paddy wagon, they put those plastic cuffs on me, and they put them on ridiculously tight. In fact, they hurt some nerve endings in my thumb, and it's still numb, as a matter of fact. After the paddy wagon, they took us to the Park Police Station and kept us in little cells for about, I guess, 3 to 4 hours, maybe 6 hours from what I heard from other people.
Well, I think that it was closer to, because we didn't leave the Park Police till 11 or 12, so I think it was like 8 hours at least we were there.
But you have no concept of time in
right,
there, so
right, exactly.
I had no idea. Anyway, they fingerprinted us there, and then the door opened, and Officer Walker came in, and he was gonna put a tag on my wrist with my mugshot, and I asked him, are we getting out tonight? And he said he had to ask his supervisor, and he came back, and then he slapped the thing on my wrist and asked me to put my hands behind my back. And before I knew it, we were in another paddy wagon on our way to what I consider to be a human kennel to
right.
spend our weekend in.
Unfortunately, you know, for your first arrest, like I said, it was harsh. And I've been arrested I don't know how many times, but it appears or it seems like they put the handcuffs on us as tightly as they could. They couldn't have gone any tighter, and that's never happened to me in all my numerous arrests either.
they definitely seemed like they were trying to make an example of us, and it seemed like they were trying to keep us away from the events that we had planned.
Tell my listeners about those events.
Well, after the rally and after the march, we were planning on sitting down, blocking off the White House to block the entrance of the Democratic caucus that was coming to talk about the health care bill, and we never had an opportunity to do that. The other thing we were going to do is we were going to set up our tents again at night because you had found that law.
At Camp Out Now.
Right, at Camp Out Now, we were going to set up the tents again because you had found that law that said we could set up tents there, and we never had the opportunity to do that, but thankfully the people at Camp Out Now did set up a few tents and did keep it up for 24 hours, I think, but we never got a chance to see that.
Well, with that experience, tell my listeners also about, I want to talk about the how you dedicated your arrest, and Dan, I want you to answer, I want you to be honest, but I want you to answer a very hard question after
sure.
you talk about your how you dedicated your arrest, which I think was very meaningful and very special.
Well, as you mentioned, I've been a 9/11 truth activist for a long time. And before I came down to Camp Out Now, I said that I was going to dedicate each arrest to a different 9/11 victim. And so when they arrested me, I said, I dedicate this arrest to a 9/11 victim family member, it should have just said 9/11 victim, Robert McElvain Jr., who was the son of Bob McElvain, who has been one of the most outspoken 9/11 family members seeking justice. And it just felt like the right thing to do. And then Josh asked me again who I dedicated it to, and I elaborated a little bit that they've been covering up the 9/11 attacks for too long and used them for preemptive illegal wars and so forth. So I just felt like the right thing for me to do.
And
Bob
video,
loved it, by the way.
Oh, that's sweet. The video of this can be found all over the internet, really, but Piece of the Action video YouTube channel has the videos of our arrests and of you dedicating that to Robert McElvain, your arrest. And that was your only arrest.
my only arrest ever.
Go back for more because we got our camp shut down by the
I would definitely do it again.
Okay, that was my question. Would you, even knowing how horrible it was, would you be arrested again?
Without hesitation. And the reason is, the whole time I spent in jail, the one thought that, you know, I kept thinking about is that anything that we were going through paled in comparison to what the Afghanis, the Iraqis, the Pakistanis have had to contend with over the last 8 years or so, 9 years. So I would definitely do it again because, again, it's the right thing to do. When you have a system that no longer works, you have to put your body on the gears of the machine to get them to stop and listen and change their ways. It's just that simple.
Well, that's a very good answer. And of course, I would do it again. And when the opportunity presents itself, I will do it again. And when I was in jail, I was thinking there's billions of people on this planet that would trade places with me in a heartbeat. People that have been devastated by war, devastated by, you know, the U.S. economic policies and U.S. imperialism, you know, to them, having a dry place to stay, even the people in Washington, D.C., the past dozens of people sleeping on the streets in Washington, D.C., in the shadow of the White House. Well, John, your very first arrest, you haven't been convicted of anything, and you have a stay-away order from the White House. How does that make you feel?
It's unconstitutional. I feel like I've been constitutionally raped of my rights, or unconstitutionally.
And the penalty, if any of us, any of the six of us who were given that stay-away order, if any of us violate that, we get 6 months in jail.
I know, that's absurd.
There's people out there that have done far worse than that haven't spent any time in jail.
And all we have to do is step on the sidewalk, and we get 6 months in prison. That's absurd. for trying to exercise our First Amendment rights. That's absurd.
We, like I said earlier, this nation has, our government has literally lost its mind. And we the people, like Elaine said, and like I've been saying, you've been saying for a long time, we the people are the ones that have to turn this country around. And John Gold, I thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I thank you for taking that step of sacrificing some of your creature comforts to try and make the world a better place. And this horrible experience can't be in vain. We have to just step up the pressure.
Thank you, Cindy. You were such an inspiration, and thank you for having me on today.
Thank you, John. Talk to you soon.
Bye, sweetie.
That was my friend John Gold, 9/11 truth activist and fellow arrestee for our March 20th arrest.
I will promise you this, that if we have not gotten our troops out by the time I am president, it is the first thing I will do. I will get our troops home. We will bring an end to this war. You can take that to the bank.
Voices on the radio, until us have we go into war. Those brave men and women in uniform, they want to know what they're fighting for. Generals want to hear the end game. The allies want to prove the plan. But the oil men in the White House, they just don't give a damn. 'Cause it's all about the price of oil. It's all about the price of oil. Don't give me no shit about blood, sweat, tears, and toil. It's all about the price of oil, yeah.
My last guests on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, our show about criminalization of dissent, is a member of Iraq Vets Against the War and War Resister, and another very good friend of mine, Mathis Shiro. Mathis, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Hi, Cindy. I'm happy to be here.
And you've actually been on before when we were in Martha's Vineyard together.
Yes, that's right. That was, I guess, my last vacation.
Well, it turned into a vacation. It wasn't supposed to be, but we kind of turned it into a vacation after Senator Kennedy died and the president left Martha's Vineyard. But anyway,
Well, you know, I feel like any time we're taking a righteous stance against injustice, that we can derive from it equal pleasure as we do from vacation, right?
Well, absolutely, and it's a good way to look at it because it seems like that's what my entire life is about now. So my entire life is a vacation. I want to talk a little bit about March 20th. At the rally, you and Elaine, who was the first guest on the show, Elaine Brower, burned an American flag. You know, I thought that that was the bravest thing that you did that day, and it took a lot of guts to publicly take that stand, especially in this post 9/11 false patriotism we have in this country. So at the end of the march, when I saw you and Elaine and just two other people lying on the White House sidewalk, I thought, how can I let Elaine and Mathis lay there by themselves when they just did this really brave thing of burning an American flag? And even though I wasn't planning on being arrested yet that day, we were going to do civil disobedience at Camp Out Now later, I crossed the line and I was arrested with you. Tell my listeners what it was like to burn the American flag up on stage at the rally, and the response that you've had to that since that happened.
Sure. Well, I have to say, burning that flag was probably one of the most liberating acts that I ever underwent myself, and may indeed be the most honest expression of my feelings to date within this movement. I see that flag as a pure representation of empire, of the wars and the genocides and the racism and all of the everything that's tied up in it. And I feel personally so damaged when I am forced to reify that flag's significance, especially within a peace movement context. So me and Elaine and Robin taking that stand was profoundly liberating to us, and we have seen it as liberating to others, though certainly drawing its fair share of dissent.
Well, of course, I wrote a short piece in support of what you did, because even if you know, you don't agree with why you burn the American flag, what that flag is supposed to represent supports what you did.
Well, what I try and remember, what I've been reflecting on this week, Cindy, is it's actually in 3 days it'll be the anniversary of when Martin Luther King gave his Beyond Vietnam speech at the Riverside Church. And while most of us remember that speech as being one of the two most prominent and famous and really positive speeches that MLK gave, in fact, he was widely condemned at the time for making it. He was condemned by the media, he was condemned by the American public, and maybe most damaging, he was condemned by his own movement. Leaders within his own Southern Leadership Conference, as well even the NAACP, issued statements saying that Martin Luther King did not speak for them when he stood up there and said that the war in Vietnam was a crime. In time, that speech has come to be propped up as one of the, as I said, the defining moments in his career and in his activism. And even us in the anti-war movement look back at this speech and think of it as a great turning point and a launching point for a broader movement. And so I try and keep that in mind. I try and keep in mind that people's first reaction to truth and righteousness is not always righteous in and of itself. And the more criticism that I hear, I find an opportunity to stir a more open and honest debate. There are folks out there right now who disagree with the fact that we burnt the flag, who are planning now actions in which they're going to symbolically reclaim the flag. And I see this as progress. Even if it's not as far as I have come in my own understanding, at least these folks are starting to acknowledge that that flag is not ours.
Well, you know, I think we need to acknowledge that that flag isn't ours. It hasn't been for a long time. But to a significant amount of our own population and the population of the world, it's always represented death and destruction and oppression. So people need to think beyond themselves, too. And, you know, Martin Luther King Jr.'s Beyond Vietnam speech, also that was in 3 days was the day he gave it. But then a year later, exactly a year later, he was assassinated for linking the Vietnam War to poverty, to racism, to militarism, for challenging the system and not just challenging or working for civil rights, to realize that you couldn't work for civil rights if you weren't working for peace also. But and another reason why I appreciate you so much is because you have, you know, consistently taken courageous acts. And in 3 days is also the sixth anniversary of when my son was killed in Iraq. But you are a war resister, aren't you?
I am, and I will be till the day I die, Cindy. Which hopefully won't be within a year.
Well, no, please, that's not what I was saying. I hope not. And what Elaine and I said too is that being arrested and staying in jail for 50 hours was hard, but none of us were in danger of losing our lives that day. And one of the frustrating things to me is when the barriers came down around you all, only four other people joined. It wasn't like a rush. If hundreds of people had breached the barriers, we wouldn't have had to spend 50 hours in jail, I don't think.
Well, I mean, I can't say for sure what would or would not have happened, but I can, in a sense, agree with you that a large portion of our movement right now is stuck in what I've come to call flagatory. They've yet to move past that place of confusion and desperation, and I think that inaction definitely reflects that. And we need a movement that's willing to act spontaneously, that's capable of being nonviolently composed, but radically resistant to the crimes that are happening in our names.
Well, another thing you say too is we have to stop smoking the Democrat.
That's right. The Democrat is It seems that so many are strung out on it, and that combined with the Obama late is a cocktail of disaster for the Middle East, and for countries yet to be invaded by our empire, unless we, as I said, move past flagatory and embrace the power that we have to end this.
Well, that's excellent, Mathis. You told me you just wrote a piece. Is there about burning the flag, about what happened that day, and your ideology about it? Is there a place where my listeners can read it?
Oh, absolutely, Cindy. I'm going to be publishing it here within the next, I would say, 10 minutes to IVAW.org. The piece is entitled Beyond Flagatory. And as well, I'll be sending it out to my listservs and encourage people to post and repost and comment. And if they disagree, tell me why and start a conversation that hopefully can move this movement to a point of effectiveness where people are no longer needlessly suffering while folks stand behind barricades that don't exist anywhere but within their minds.
Well, thank you for taking that courageous step, Mathis, and thanks for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox again.
Always a pleasure, Cindy.
I'm sure we'll see each other soon, and we'll talk soon.
I love you very much.
I love you too, sweetie. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was this week's edition of Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my producer, Mikey, my guest, Elaine Brower, John Gold, Mathis Chereau, and I especially like to thank you for listening.
I must make my witness. I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. Sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest, I don't want you to riot, I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being, God damn it, my life has value.
Just get up from your chairs right now. Go stick your head out and yell and keep yelling. I'm as mad as hell. I'm not going to take this anymore. Just get up from your chairs.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.